south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander, my thoughts ever stray.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, so let's get started.
You know, I get a lot of emails from people asking me which places in Latin America I would never recommend for you to live, work, play, and or retire as an expat. Now, you all know that over the years I recommend you keep away from those high-volume tourist places like Costa Rica and Panama and anywhere a cruise ship stops. Those are places where so many gringos have invaded that the gringo advantage has pretty much evaporated. You're no longer that odd, cool gringo like you would have been some 20 years ago. Instead, now you're just a dollar sign. And I've also pointed out some countries that are just too damn expensive. They're trying really hard to be first world, and their governments have become huge, and they're just about at the tax and spend levels of some first world countries. Case in point, Argentina and Chile. But you know, every Latin country has its good and bad points, and like I've said so many times before, if you end up living in a town of 50,000 or under, it would be practically like living in Mayberry or Hooterville in the 60s back in the States, except you will have all the modern IT conveniences, high-speed internet and cell phones and all that. However, there are some countries, and two I can think of in particular, where even moving to a small town like that is not going to save you from something that we all really dread, and that's general crime. I mean, it doesn't matter how good the internet or how cheap the food or rent or utility prices are. If you've got rampant crime, even in the small towns, well, forget about it. Now, there's four countries that stand out at all levels when it comes to crime. What I mean is you can't avoid it unless you wall yourself up in one of those guarded residential towers or subdivision. Afraid to take a walk to the local neighborhood store or barber shop because there's a real chance of getting mugged. And who wants to live like that? And those four really crime-ridden Latin countries are the Dominican Republic, Venezuela, most of Mexico except for certain parts of the Yucatan area on the Caribbean side, which isn't going to last, by the way, and finally, all of Brazil is quite dangerous, too. And you know, I still get emails all the time from people asking me, even arguing with me about my stance on Brazil. Now, if you've been listening to some of my past shows, you know crime's not the only reason why I don't recommend Brazil, but for today, I'm going to tell you once and for all, and I hope it sinks in, why Brazil is not a place I'd ever recommend. Unless you really have a hankering to see the beaches of Rio, like the Copacabana, and of course Ipanema, but then still you'll want to stay in one of those all-inclusive resorts because it's not recommended that you walk alone on the public beaches. In fact, there are signs all over the place, even in the big hotels, warning you to that effect too. Sounds like a nice vacation, huh? Now, I know some of you have a real hankering to see Carnival, and I admit there's nothing like it in the world. And you know, Brazil's version of Carnival puts the one in New Orleans to shame. But remember, if you're going to check out the Carnival festivities, make sure you don't carry any money, jewelry, or valuables, and once again, you don't do it on your own. So anyway, once and for all, right now I hope to dispel you of the myth that Brazil is in any way, shape, or form ready for first world expats. Now, what prompted me to go off on Brazil right now is an email I got from one of my new friends, an expat wisdom seminar attendee named Bill, who sent me an email and a link to a YouTube video. And I understand that Richard Martin talked about this on his show too. But since not everyone listens to both of our shows, and since Latin America is my shtick, I'll put in my two cents too. So the email starts like this. Hey Johnny, have you seen this? Here's a video that's gone viral in Mexico. And he sent me the link. And if you want it, just send me an email at theexpatfiles@gmail.com or johnny@expatwisdom.com and I'll send it off to you. Well, Bill, the video's not only gone viral in Mexico, but it's gone viral all over Latin America. But unfortunately, the video is in Portuguese and there are some versions with Spanish subtitles, so I don't think too many first worlders are going to see it. Unless it's in English, they're just not interested. But really, if you get a chance, just watch it. It's a TV news report of a drugstore robbery in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Now, I'm going to give you the English narrative. So, here goes. Now, let me set up the visual. The video starts by showing a well-known thief, Mauricio Faril, alias El Pepita, leaving his car parked outside a pharmacy. Then he jumps out of his car, enters the pharmacy, and robs it. Now, while El Pepita is in the pharmacy, another thief appears on the scene and steals El Pepita's car. And you can see all that in progress perfectly on the video. And by the way, the nickname El Pepita means the seed. Like, for example, the seed in an avocado. And another thing, it seems like down here in Latin America, everyone's got a nickname. Every Latino male, that is. In fact, the whole hierarchy of Latin nicknames is pretty amusing, and I'm going to do a show on that later. Anyway, then El Pepita emerges from the pharmacy with a bag of stolen loot, and he looks around and sees his car's been stolen. Now, he's confused by all that. His car's gone, and he kind of scratches his head and walks back and forth in front of the pharmacy for a minute. Then, suddenly, a third guy with a hood over his head appears walking down the street quite rapidly. And he steals El Pepita's bag of stolen loot. He yanks it right out of his hand and takes off running in the same direction. And you can see that very clearly in the video, too. Now, later, El Pepita got ID'd by cameras inside the pharmacy and ended up getting arrested. Now, at the police station, when the cops heard his story, they allowed a local television news crew into the police station for an interview. So, El Pepita says to the news crew, quote, "These days, the violence here is so great that when you go out to steal, sometimes you return poorer than ever. People who do what I do can't even conduct a dishonest life," he says. "I can't believe they actually stole my new car." Then the reporter asks him, "You mean to say you just bought that car?" Then El Pepita says, "No, I didn't buy anything, man. I stole that car yesterday." Then El Pepita goes on to explain to the reporter, "Now, let me tell you how things are. These thieves don't let one enjoy the things we earn with our own sweat. That's just the way things are, man." Then the reporter cuts him off and says, "But wait, if the car wasn't yours, what are you complaining about?" And then El Pepita gets all upset and says, "This robbery of my robbery is just a lack of respect, sir." Then the reporter says, "But the money wasn't yours either." Then El Pepita gets upset again and says, "What do you mean it wasn't mine, sir? It was my money. I stole it. It's mine." So there you have it. In a period of about 30 seconds, and yes, amazingly enough, that all took place in about 30 seconds. See for yourself. You get to witness three separate robberies, two of them where thieves are stealing from thieves. So bottom line, all you expat wannabes who are thinking about Brazil for whatever reason, just remember El Pepita's famous last words. He says, "That's just the way things are, man." Oh, and while we're on the topic, I have to mention that terrible incident that happened April 2nd in Rio de Janeiro. You might have seen that one in the news where an American woman was gang-raped and beaten aboard a public transport van, basically Brazil's version of a small chicken bus. She was beaten and raped aboard this small chicken bus while her French boyfriend was handcuffed and hit with a crowbar and forced to watch the attack. Which means, of course, that there should be a congressional ban on crowbars, right? You know what I'm getting at. Anyway, now this is in a city that supposedly has cleaned up its terrible street crime problem, according to government propaganda, of course. And the government has said it's cleaning up due to the fact that next year they'll be hosting the World Cup, and the new Pope is coming to town in July. And by the way, the couple that was mugged and assaulted were in that bus and on their way to the famous Copacabana beach that everyone knows about. That's another famous spot where tourists often get robbed. In fact, I have a very good friend from Chicago who had a gun stuck in his face in Copacabana Beach, and they took his wallet and his watch. And that happened at 11 o'clock in the morning, about 300 paces from his four-star hotel. Now, as far as that chicken bus rape crime, I don't know if you knew this, but there are gangs of thieves and ex-cops and government officials operating clandestine fleets of those little mini chicken buses, with a good percentage of them involved in organized crime. Now, Brazilian officials reluctantly admit there's a huge amount of crimes on their public transportation system, many involving sexual assaults and rapes. In fact, assaults on women are so prevalent that the Rio subway system now has special women-only cars to try to minimize sexual attacks and muggings. And the question is it working? Well, according to government spin, it is. But according to lower and middle-class women on the street, the ones that have to take public transportation to work and back, they still say they're afraid every day when they ride the bus, and that government crime statistics are misleading, since most women who are sexually assaulted never report it to the police. And those that have been mugged and attacked say they generally know their attackers and the criminal gangs that constantly ride the bus. And even though these thieves and gang members are well known in the local communities, the police do nothing about it. And more often than not, the cops are involved in various criminal activities themselves. In any case, you've been forewarned many times. But anyway, you know, I still suspect I'm going to get some emails saying, Johnny, why not Brazil? And to that I say, why not walk around Detroit with your wallet on your head? Duh. Anyway, a show or two ago, I talked about good old Hugo Chavez. And as you might expect, now I'm getting emails from people saying, hey, wouldn't that be a great place to invest? You know, the place has fallen apart. They've just devalued their currency again. That means the bottom of a market, maybe, right? Well, you know what? From the outside, it might look like that. But from an insider's point of view, from expats who've actually lived down in Venezuela for a while, they don't see it as an opportunity at all. In a nutshell, here's what they have to say about living, working, playing, retiring, and investing in post-Chavez Venezuela. Now, as you know, in the last 12 or so years since Hugo was in office, he's discouraged the use of dollars down in Venezuela, and, like I said in a previous show, they actually punish you when you convert to bolivars, the local currency, when you go to a bank or a legitimate trading house. However, if you change dollars to bolivars on the street, on the gray market, you do get a really terrific rate. However, there are a hell of a lot of counterfeit bolivar notes going around, and to tell you the truth, I was down there for quite a while, and I couldn't tell the difference. So I doubt the casual green expat or tourist is ever going to figure that out. That said, all legal and financial documents in Venezuela are written in bolivars. That's it. Just bolivars. Which is not good for anyone holding bolivars, since the country's had 20 to 35% annual inflation for the past couple of years. And now they've had two official big-time currency devaluations just in the last 50 days, demonstrating the country's monumental fiscal incompetence, considering it's the largest exporter of oil in the Western Hemisphere. That said, it should be flush with petrodollars, but in fact, there's a huge shortage of U.S. dollars there. The fact is, you can go to banks and change your dollars into bolivars at a crappy rate, but they will not let you change bolivars to dollars. That's an impossibility. And more on that in a second. Anyway, like I said, the only legal documents in Venezuela are written in bolivars and not in dollars or euros. So if you're looking to do a property deal or sign a contract and the deal is written up in dollars or euros, well, it's not such a good deal at all because it'll be completely off the books and you might just be getting screwed. Now, I know some people who have signed loan agreements or personal notes or mortgages in foreign currencies like pounds and euros and dollars. You know, private deals on the side, sometimes even signed in a lawyer's office, often because they're trying to do something off the radar. Not necessarily illegal, but just off the radar. Anyway, if the seller or the guy taking out the loan doesn't deliver, you have absolutely no legal recourse at all. So basically, even if you have a lawyer, if the currency amounts are in anything but bolivars, well, it's basically a handshake deal and a gentleman's agreement. And you know, like expat Eddie says, that may be okay between two gringos. But if you've got any Latin parties involved at all, well, in the end, if you don't cover your ass, you're probably going to get screwed. Now, don't get me wrong. Deals with Latins always start out with best intentions, but with them, a promise and a handshake's worth about nothing. And if you think that's BS, I can list 100 cases where that's happened among my own expat and gringo friends. And we learn fast, and it's not the end of the world. But our problem is, we come down with first world values, and Latins have theirs. The fact is, a great number of Latins don't honor their agreements even when they're perfectly legal and drawn up correctly. And intellectual Latins here, when asked about that particular fault in Latin society, they'll tell you it's one of the negative legacies of colonial rule, since Spanish kings, governors, and mayors weren't much good for their word either. And the reason why you have so many Latins defaulting on agreements like that, even when they're perfectly legal, is because the court system is completely broken. And of course, I'm talking about the Venezuelan court system now. Yes, agreed, in the rest of Latin America, the court systems move at a snail's pace, even on a good day, and everyone up the line is corrupt in their own way, including Supreme Court justices. Now, just as an aside here, Supreme Court justices, by the way, can be bought off for $5,000 or $10,000, which is mighty cheap considering. In fact, I know of a case exactly like that that happened to a friend of mine, and he explained the whole Supreme Court payoff deal to me in great detail, since he was involved in it. And someday, I promise, I'll tell you exactly how it went down. So basically what I'm saying is, in the rest of Latin America, the wheels of justice move at a snail's pace, but they do move. But they'll move at warp speed if you've got the do-re-mi. And I'm talking about the rest of Latin America, as opposed to Venezuela, where the legal system just absolutely doesn't work at all, especially for first world gringos, since Chavez has basically poisoned the legal system against anyone from the States, which is not to say the Venezuelans don't love gringos too. They really do. I'm talking the common street-level people. But because of Chavez, the legal system is antagonistic to anything gringo. So on the street, you do have that gringo advantage. But when dealing with government or government officials, being a gringo is a disadvantage. Now accordingly, nearly all the gringos I know that live in Venezuela, they told me that for a variety of reasons, not just the Chavez anti-American sentiment, they tell me that most foreigners, including European foreigners, do not adjust well to life in Venezuela. Which is why if you actually decide to go down and you think it's hit rock bottom, rent and don't buy a thing till you've been down at least 6 months. And Venezuela is one country where the schools don't promote English at all. English programs in public schools are vastly underfunded after so many years of Chavez anti-American sentiment. Which means if you go down to Venezuela, you better learn your Spanish fast. And to tell you the truth, you probably will because you won't find many English speakers at all. And as for the tourist destinations, oh, they're loaded with tourists, all right, but Venezuelan tourists, and not gringo or European tourists speaking English. Though the one place there is a decent contingency of English speakers is on Margarita Island. And I spoke about that in some detail on a recent show, so check it out in the archives. So anyway, if you think about investing or buying a property in Venezuela, well, you can go on the internet and you won't find many companies from the States doing that. But you will see some real estate and brokerage companies actively promoting properties in the UK and Europe. But it'd be nuts to buy anything sight unseen from the internet. And by the way, my sources tell me that today, if you go to Venezuela and actually try to find some of these European properties and projects, you'll find most of the companies that were promoting such things just a few years ago have disappeared, and you will find a lot of incomplete and abandoned first world style projects. And that's why a lot of people think Venezuela has hit bottom. But I, for one, don't believe it, even though the local real estate people and the real estate ads are saying this is the best time to buy. Always be leery when real estate guys lay that on you. Because anyone who knows the true fiscal and financial circumstances of what's happening in Venezuela and the grave problems that have led up to the two huge monetary devaluations just in the last 50 days will tell you Venezuela has by no means hit bottom yet. The Venezuelan government has announced officially that exchange controls will be imposed basically forever, and they think that'll put a damper on the capital flight that's been taking place already in a big way. And new laws have been passed that will make large, unofficial currency exchanges completely illegal, meaning you'll have to change your dollars and your euros at a bank at the official exchange rate, as opposed to changing it on the street, on the gray market, where you can get almost triple your money exchanging dollars for bolivars. Oh, and here's another thing. The Chavez government has started taking over empty private land and apartments and turning them over to people he deems more deserving. So, there's two problems here. If you buy a tract of land and you decide to sit on it, and you don't develop it for some years, and people do that all the time, all over the world, waiting for land prices to go up or a more convenient time to develop. But you're taking a chance if you try that in Venezuela. You just might come down to visit your property and see some public housing on it. And there's a second problem. You might buy a nice piece of property, build a nice house or office building, not realizing that beautiful mountain view right across the road from your house or your business, that beautiful empty and undeveloped land. Well, it could at any time be confiscated by the government and turned into a housing project, a very low-income housing project or worse. In fact, I personally know a case like that. And yes, if you have dollars, there's an easy-to-locate gray market where you can at least double your money. But don't, under any circumstances, unless it's an absolute dire emergency, use your credit card down there. I'm talking about an international credit card that's issued somewhere else. Since when you get back home and get your bill or check it on the internet, you'll find they exchanged your dollars for the official Bolivar rate, and you probably got screwed out of at least half of your money. But if you have a Visa or a MasterCard drawn on a Venezuelan bank, then it won't matter because your account will be in Bolivars. And you'll get screwed by at least 50% using your international debit card or credit card to get Bolivars out of an ATM machine. And by the way, unlike the rest of Latin America, you can't get dollars out of an ATM machine in Venezuela. Everywhere else you can, except Cuba. And by the way, they do have ATMs in Cuba if you can find one that works. But you'll have to have a credit card that's drawn on a non-US bank. If not, they'll block your transactions. So let me give you a brief rundown on the ongoing currency and exchange problems for expats in Venezuela. In fact, the financial system has been an absolute chaotic mess for the last 10 or 12 years, ever since Hugo took over. But you can't blame him completely because it was a total train wreck before he got in there too. In fact, that was one of his big campaign promises, to fix it. Oops. Okay, so here's Venezuela's recent monetary history. And as I hit the major points in this ongoing disaster, you tell me if you want to live your life under these conditions. Okay, the worst of it started in 2005, when the government assessed large fines and jail terms for those caught violating the new dollar-bolivar exchange laws. The only saving grace back then was that it wasn't going to affect anyone in the country for less than 180 days. Basically, so as not to scare off the tourists, who automatically get a 90 to 180-day tourist visa on entering. Now, right after that in 2005, Chavez, by government edict, increased official wages by 25% on May 1st, another 15% on February 1st, 2006, another 10% in September, and another 20% on May 2007, 30% more in May 2008, 10% more in May 2009, 10% more in September 2009, which only succeeded in killing a lot of marginal businesses and increasing the cost of living over 100% in 4 years. And that cost of living rose for everyone. But the problem was a lot worse for foreigners and other expats dealing in dollars, since if they had their dollars wire transferred from the outside to Venezuela, the dollars were automatically switched over to bolivars, 40% lower than you could get on the street. So foreigners and expats who receive their income in dollars from overseas, like retirees getting Social Security, their cost of living rose not 100% over those 4 years like the locals, but more than 150%. Now, by February 2009, the black or gray market exchange rate was double the official rate. And by August 2009, the dollar crisis worsened, and on the street you could exchange your dollar for 150% more than the bank rate. Then in January 2010, the government announced a 100% devaluation of the bolivar, which meant for a while, if you traded dollars on the black or gray market, you could get 60% more than the bank rate. And by the way, by January 2010, Venezuela imported the majority of its food, durable goods, and medicine, while the three mainland countries that border it, Guyana, Brazil, and Colombia, were all net exporters to Venezuela. And if you were to ask the average Venezuelan on the street, what are the country's top exports, they'll always tell you, 1, oil, 2, cocaine, 3, people, and 4, international beauty queens. And believe me, that's no joke. Then by 2012, the dollar rate on the street settled into 100% more than the official bank rate. Then on October 7, 2012, just as Chavez was reelected, in direct response to that, the black market simply exploded and you could get 400% more bolivars for a dollar on the street versus the bank rate. Meanwhile, all through 2012, the government kept denying the rumors of devaluations. Then, about 2 months ago, on February 9th, 2013, the government announced, guess what? A devaluation of 33%. Which meant if you went to the bank with a dollar, instead of getting 4.3 bolivars to the dollar, you got 6.3. And now on April 1st, and this is no April Fool's joke except for people living in Venezuela, the government once again announced a huge devaluation, this time in selling bolivar-denominated bonds. So we've yet to see what's going to shake out on the street. Some economists are saying the only way the government's going to see any headway at all is if it devalues another 100% and brings the bolivar to about 12 to the dollar officially. even though on the street you can still get about 15 bolivars to the dollar. Now, that's the fifth official currency devaluation in a decade. And what's left unsaid is that they're devaluing their currency against the U.S. dollar, which in the last 10 years has lost 50% of its value. So, in reality, who cares if Venezuela's GDP has been increasing 4 to 5% a year when inflation is 25% to 35% a year? Believe me, the place is in utter economic chaos and you don't want to be there. Now for some final sad facts about Venezuela. Do you know that about 80% of the country works for the minimum wage of about $115 a month? Which, get this, is the real street rate if you convert bolivars into dollars, because they're paid in bolivars. However, if you go by the government official rate, they're actually making about $350 to $400 a month. And that's why if you look up minimum wage statistics on the internet, it actually looks like Venezuela has made great minimum wage and employment increases. But you see, when they publish those statistics, they do the conversion to dollars using the official bank rate, which is absolute crap. So when you've got guys like Oliver Stone telling you in his documentaries that Chavez has increased the standard of living for the common man by leaps and bounds, it's all really smoke and mirrors. And even managerial and professional salaries are not much higher than the minimum wage. Now, the standard salary for a doctor or an accountant or a bank manager is about 3,500 to 4,000 bolivars a month, which converts to about $200 a month at the street rate, but around $600 a month if you use the official bank rate. So believe me, bottom line, Venezuela is no place to start a business and no place to build or buy a house. But just like the rest of Latin America, the only way to make a decent level of income by our standards, our first world standards, is by starting your own business. And starting your own business is quite easy and cheap to do, except in Venezuela. Since Venezuela under Chavez has become such a paperwork nightmare, because he's more than doubled the size of government since he's been in office. Not to mention, starting a business takes quadruple the amount of paperwork it took just 10 years ago. And by the way, right now, in Venezuela, there are a ton of businesses for sale, and even more on the verge of collapse. So, if you do decide to go down there right now, you'll have your pick of the litter and things will be very cheap. However, you'll be buying into an economy that's riding the rim of the crapper and looks like it's about to get the power flush. And for those of you who might be thinking, hey, now there's an opportunity, I'll bring a ton of dollars down there and exchange them on the street and get an instant 300 or 400% gain. Well, that'll work if you can actually get the physical dollars in the country. But it won't work if you do a wire transfer because you'll get that crappy bolivar bank rate.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
That's You've been listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America, coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles at gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
Ah, she was a picture. He knows.